Katie Kempner, and welcome to Perspectives, which is a series of inspiring conversations with remarkable working women. And I am very excited today to be talking with Kat Downs-Mulder, who's Senior Vice President and General Manager at Yahoo News. Kat, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Katie. I'm so excited to be here.
Me too. It took a while to put together. There was a baby in the middle, and now here we are.
Yes, here we are. Thank you for your patience. I had a baby last summer, and so it's taken me a while to get back in the booking for the show. So I'm so thrilled to be able to be here and talking with you about my work at Yahoo and life and career and so many different things. So
fantastic, because that's all the stuff I love to talk about. So let's jump right in then and start with your career and how you got to your role now at Yahoo.
Absolutely. So I went to college and studied journalism in a time when the internet was really beginning to disrupt journalism. It still is to this day, which is one of the reasons why I love this industry. It's full of change and innovation and unexpected disruption. But at the time that I was in school, doing journalism on the internet was a relatively new thing. And that was what I started to study, this intersection of design and digital storytelling, engineering, video and audio. It was sort of I went to UNC and it was a very multidisciplinary program and one of the first ones of its kind. And so when I graduated, I knew that I wanted to go into that sort of digital journalism and multimedia. First, I found it really, really interesting. But second, it was such a new field that you could really get interesting jobs sort of right off the bat. So I started, moved up to DC, which is where I live now, really for a job and never expected to stay for almost two decades now. So I moved up for here for a job at USA Today as an intern. And after that, I went to work at the Baltimore Sun as a web producer, basically working on the homepage. And on the side of that job, I did, some infographics and digital development. And that's what helped me get a job at the Washington Post. And when I first started working at the Washington Post, it was a very different time when newspapers and websites were sometimes not even in the same building. So I worked technically at WashingtonPost.com or WPNI, as it used to be called. And I did both product design and editorial design. And that was sort of what I think of as my first era at the Washington Post, was that time at the website. After a couple of years there, the companies merged and we kind of moved downtown into the newspaper. And there I started working more in editorial. So I spent many years in the newsroom of the Washington Post, about 10 years working on stories of pretty much every flavor and every kind and every size. Eventually I became a leader there. So I sort of moved up to the ranks until I led my own department, which was the graphics department. And after almost 5 years of doing that, I decided to make a transition to product. That sort of came about through really doing a lot of work around, building systems and tools. For example, we built a tool to help reporters make charts, or we built data visualization tools, quiz building tools, map building tools. And that creation of tools is what really helped me get into the product space. So then I led product at the Post for a few years. And ultimately, I held sort of a hybrid position, a first of its kind position at the Post, where I was the chief product officer, sort of running all product, including revenue driving product like subscriptions at the Post, acquisition of subscribers, retention of subscribers, in addition to, site, apps, newsletters, et cetera, and big portions of the digital newsroom. So after doing that for a long time, I really was sort of intrigued by the opportunity at Yahoo because it is such an exciting moment at Yahoo right now. First, just under the ownership of Apollo for the past couple of years, the company is really transforming very, very rapidly. It has tremendous scale with 185 million monthly visitors for the news network. So it's very big. We have tons and tons of different content partners in the aggregator model. Plus, we have journalists here in the U.S. and around the globe. And we just announced that we have our creator program in beta. So now we are bringing creators into Yahoo, particularly around lifestyle topics. So it's a really exciting time. It's a great you know, in a moment when so many people are looking to get their news faster, simpler, with less chaos in the day to day, it's really exciting to be at Yahoo. You know, something that I heard a lot when we were doing user research in previous, you know, previous years and roles was that people love getting their news from multiple sources, right? They love to have variety in their news diet. And that's one of the things that we're able to provide at Yahoo that I love kind of leaning into, because it allows people to look across sort of that broad spectrum of the internet. And so that's what brought me to Yahoo, that interest in that moment. And so I've been here about a year and a half, since December of 22. And here my role is general manager of news. So I run yahoo.com and the news business within Yahoo. And it's been a really, really exciting time. We're moving very fast, building a really great team. And I'm very excited about the products that we're putting out in the world.
Now that we got that out of the way, I have enormous question to ask you, but you know, you said people like to get their news in a variety of places.
Yeah.
This is a big question, but in this very divided country, in a election year, what do you see as the actual role of news today?
I think that people are overwhelmed. Regular people really want to stay in touch with their community and their world. And there is so much going out there on every medium, you know, whether it's written, whether it's text, whether it's video, whether it's on their social platforms or in places where they traditionally get their news. They're just really overwhelmed. There's so much incoming. And some of it is what we would think of as harder traditional news that really sticks closely with the facts and is written with a more objective point of view. But a lot of it is perspective or opinion, or it's created by influencers, or it's created now by AI, right? So there's all of this stuff out there that people are trying to make sense of. And I think that, you know, Yahoo News as a publisher and as an aggregator, our main focus is to try to bring what I think of as clarity to that chaos. So how do you simplify all of that stuff and just help people feel like they're on top of what's going on, so that when somebody brings it up to them at the doctor's office or at their regular office or at a dinner party, that they know what's being talked about and that they can speak about it with confidence because they feel like they got it from a reliable place where they could trust what they're reading. You know, the best that a news organization can really do, I feel like really the value there in a news organization is to help be that guide, to help people get to the good stuff, to help people find that quality information, not to contribute to the noise, but to contribute to the reduction of the noise and the focusing so that people can use their time more efficiently and not to make like more media on the internet that people have to consume, right? Not more, but really better time spent with the information that we produce is what we're trying to go for. And I think there's a tremendous amount of value in that. Time better spent online and just better information so that you feel more informed.
Better information. But one of the things that used to be in the days of Walter Cronkite, not even going back that far. I mean, I remember I had my wedding announcement in the New York Times and two different people like called everybody to fact check my wedding announcement. In this age of news everywhere, as you said, people like to get their news everywhere. There's a big danger of not having true news. What is real news? What's fake news, so to speak? And also, in addition to that, being impartial. What do you think the role of a news organization like yours is in this crazy world of how people are receiving news?
I think our role is to help people figure out the facts in as simple a way as possible. So that involves helping them distill what's important to know. So what truly is a fact? And then to help them, if they choose to, get a variety of perspectives as well, to help them contextualize those facts. And I think it's important for them to understand the provenance of the information. So where did the information come from? In our case, you know, we tell people about the publishers that we're bringing into our network, the authors of the work that they're reading. Those kinds of signals help people assess, you know, they just help people assess the quality of the information that they're getting. And so I think that you know, generally speaking, being able to give people information that you know the provenance of, that you can stand behind that provenance and that process that goes into it, right? There is a whole process that goes into reporting, as you talked about, even with your wedding announcement. It's like, you know, you have to make calls, you have to uncover information, you have to contextualize it. All those things are really important. And so, you know, trying to convey as much of that as we can to readers in the moment when they're consuming information to try to boost those signals of trust, I think is important.
So I want to ask you one more thing about news before we move on, which is, I know you have, we didn't go into it, but you've won a lot of awards for, you're a true journalist. And yet on my phone, and maybe it's because I can't figure out the settings, I get news alerts all the time because the Kardashians wore something different. What do you think is happening today with what people are thinking of as news? Is it that they just can't take any more bad news? Or what is going on with people's tolerance, I should say, for news?
Well, I think there's multiple things in there. I think when it comes to like hard news, particularly politics, yes, I think there is some news fatigue that we have seen over the past several years, as the news cycle has been pretty relentless on a lot of fronts through COVID, you know, whether it's politics, whether it's public health, whether it's war. And so there have been, you know, a lot of people seeking information that maybe feels more actionable to them on a day-to-day basis. That could be information, you know, about their community, about their hobbies, about their entertainment. And so people are really seeking, what we try to serve is a spectrum of interest. So I have my interests about those things, hobbies and entertainment. And then I have those interests about my community and my world, you know, which sometimes, oftentimes are harder hitting. And a balanced news diet is comprised of all of those things, just like a healthy person, you know, it has all kinds of different dimensions to their personality. And so we try to serve the whole person, you know, not overweighting the sort of, you know, more fun aspects in, you know, obliterating the more serious things, but really presenting them all together. Because that's what we find that our readers really want. They want, you know, they want seriousness with a bit of levity. They want optimism with reality, right? They want to mix those things. They don't want to live in a bubble where they only get Kardashians, and they don't want to live in a bubble where they only get, you know, war and devastation, right? They want to live in a balanced world where they can kind of get many different perspectives. And so figuring out how to, you know, thoughtfully, you know, present them with a variety of topics is something that we spend a lot of time on from a curation perspective and an algorithms perspective, is how do you give them, you know, how do you make sure that they know what's going on in the world while also getting to spend time on things that interest them.
And you do a really good job of that. Kudos to that. So let's talk more about you. So we talked in the beginning about your career and the way you got to where you are now. You've had such an impressive career. What has guided you in terms of making a move? When do you feel it's time to make a move? And what have you decided along the way when you're like, I'm going to try that?
Well, I love this question because I have made a lot of moves in my career. Even though I spent almost 15 years at one company, during my time at the Post, I had 9 different roles in that 14 and a half years. So I moved a bunch of times, plus a few jobs that I had before, and then the now being at Yahoo. And I think the thing that kind of always propelled me forward was a lot is sort of a combination of, I've learned a ton in this role that I'm in now, and I feel like I can contribute more, and really being able to follow sort of curiosity into that next thing. So there's something I want to learn or a problem that I want to solve. And those have been kind of the moments that have catalyzed a change for me, whether it was a change in scope or whether it was a change in sort of in a discipline, moving from news to product initially was kind of a big jump. And just looking for that sort of like spidey sense within yourself that kind of tells you I'm ready to try something new. I'm ready for, you know, because trying something new can be a bit frightening and scary sometimes. But you kind of find, at least I find with myself, there's like a sort of a craving for like, I'm ready to do something hard. I'm ready to try something new. and kind of tuning yourself to be able to hear that voice. And then, you know, figure out how to translate that voice into a real opportunity, which sometimes they present themselves, you know, easily and it's very straightforward. And then sometimes it's not as easy and you have to be more creative about, you know, where are the things that I want to learn and how do I gain the right skills so I'm ready for that job when it comes up.
So you've been in leadership positions for a really long time. And I've had a number of guests on my show recently who've talked about how leaders need a new playbook to relate to what employees need and want. And I think this goes back to my last question of, you know, everything moving so fast. So employees wanted to move fast, stay interested. Do you think it's true that leaders need a new playbook?
I think the best leaders have employed some parts of this playbook for a long time. I think it's more common to talk about important things in leadership, like listening and empathy and care for the team and the staff. It's much more popular to talk about those things now, and in some ways, even more important than it ever has been, although I would say that it always has been important, because the staff really wants it and sort of demands it now in a way that maybe they didn't before, which is that there's a conversation about, you know, that they can understand where they're headed and that they feel like they're contributing to growth and the trajectory of the company. So I think as a leader, it really takes, you know, now, and again, I do think it's something that's gone on for a long time, but I think that leaders now really do need to spend a lot of time listening to the team and thinking about how to really help them understand what they are trying to do and why we're making the decisions that we are in order to harness their creativity and their ideas to the best, you know, to maximize what we all want to maximize, which is the output of a really excellent product, whether that's great journalism, whether that's great technology, whether that's great design, whatever that great product is, to deliver excellence in it. And especially in a creative craft, you know, the work that I work in is very creative, right? You have to like really bring your whole self to it and really get that spark going. And so that does require sort of a healthy person at the center of that to be able to be, you know, to be that creative. And creativity takes bravery, right? To be able to put your ideas out there, to be able to take risks with those ideas without fear that you're going to lose your job if you don't deliver one or two times in the scheme of things, right? And so I think that that is sort of the framework that is, you know, the employees want in this day and age is to have that kind of more better relationship with their bosses. That's less like, this is what you will do, and more like, this is how we're going to work together to build something great. And I think that for me, it's exciting because I'm a person who I love to work with a team, and I love to build a team, and I love to get the best out of people. And so that type of leadership is really fun because that's when you really do get to get the best out of people, right? They don't just execute your ideas. They execute, execute on the strategy with ideas that come from anywhere. Could be totally driven by them, could be driven by the team, could in some cases be delivered by an idea that I had. But I find this very conducive to a creative environment.
And can I ask you, we mentioned that, you know, at the beginning of the show that you recently had a baby. I think also since the pandemic, going back 4 years now, believe, you know, crazy as that is, the roles of work, people were talking about balance. And this show used to be, I like to think of it about balance. And it turned out that a lot of women really did, especially mothers, didn't like the word balance. Whatever you call it, do you find that parent, people are looking now more to be able to, I'm going to use the word balance their lives more between their parenthood, if they are parents, and work time? Has that changed?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think there's just more normalization of the fact that we all have, you know, jobs outside of our job, right? We have things that we have to do. We have parents that we have to take care of. We have children we have to take care of. You know, we have whatever, houses, friends, other obligations. We have a lot going on in our lives. And so, you know, the way that I like to lead is like, we're really here to get the work done. You know, I don't want to sort of be micromanaging every minute of your day, right? I would, if you need to deal with your things, of course, you're a full human being, you know? And what really matters is that we deliver excellence in the work. And I think that shift from, you know, many, many years ago when it was sort of like you clock in, you work, you clock out, that has really changed over the years and especially accelerated by the pandemic, to where it's really, you know, people may have to take an hour off in the middle of the day so that they can go drop someone off and pick someone up, but they're going to log that hour at another time, you know, later in the evening, which may actually make them more productive, right? Which may actually make their work better. And sort of understanding and accepting that is, I think we have collectively made a lot of progress about that. I feel like people definitely talk about their families more at the office. Kids make more Zoom appearances. You know, I have a baby, but I have three older kids as well. And they do occasionally, they very rarely make it into my Zooms. But sometimes, you know, on a Friday night, you'll find that there is a lot of children that make it into the Zooms Friday night, sort of waiting for their pizza nights to begin. And it's fun because it gives you a little bit of a more of a sense of texture of the people that you work with. And I personally think that knowing those things about your colleagues, it helps you develop more camaraderie. And again, that camaraderie can lead to more trust, which leads to better work. And so I do think it's nice when you can have a little bit more in the relationship than just the transactional stuff that you always do at work. So personally, I think it's been a great evolution.
That's a great point. I also love it when you can see, you know, since people were Zooming in from their homes, you could see a little slice of their life in a way, just as you say, like a little more texture, a little more, or now you can hear, maybe, hopefully you can't, my dog barking. So,
you know. Yep. Or people have pets, or they have plants, or, you know, or they have collections. I love it when people put their collections in their Zoom background and you can ask them questions about their books or their sneakers, or, you know, it's just fun to learn a little bit more about a person through things like that.
I totally agree. And just to end, this has been so nice talking with you. Can you give us, is there one piece of advice that has really helped guide you through your life and career that you can share with us?
Absolutely. I also really love this question. So I described kind of my trajectory at the Washington Post a little bit. And there was a moment sort of earlier on in my career there where I was kind of contemplating a move from sort of a manager of a very small team to a leader of a department. And I think I had mentioned that it was a digital only team that I had led and that we were kind of transitioning into being really part of the newspaper. So this position that I was considering, you know, promotion into was also leading newspaper. And newspaper was something that I'd never worked on a newspaper before. And I remember having a conversation with one of the up-level managers from the person that I would have been reporting to in the role. And I remember telling that manager just some concerns that I had. And I remember saying, you know that I've never worked on a newspaper before, right? And I remember him saying, well, I don't know everything about everything that's under my purview. So you don't have to know everything. You just have to know who to ask. And he told me some specific stories related to that. And that phrase, you don't have to know everything, you just have to know who to ask, really shaped my approach to that role, which was find allies, ask questions, learn as much as possible, you know, approach it with a learner's mindset, and you can figure it out, right? And then you can have your team that you go to and they can help you. And then sort of over time, you know more and more, but there's always going to be some things that you don't know. And one of the things that I noticed, like sort of early career managers often will try to, they want to know everything really badly. And that, you know, once you can kind of open yourself up to saying, hey, this is not an area that I fully understand, but I'm going to identify the people that I can go to and that I can trust for advice. And I'm going to learn from them. And I'm going to use that information to help me make the best decisions that I possibly can, because my job as a leader is to try to make the best decisions that I possibly can, the most informed decisions that I possibly can. And so that piece of advice has just always deeply stuck with me and helped me sort of always in cases where I didn't always have the courage to ask, it reminded me to find the courage to ask so that I could do my best work and help my team do its best work.
That is a great one. Great answer and great place to end. Kat, thank you so much for talking with us.
Great to be here. Thanks so much, Katie, and thanks for having me again.